Baseball Tonight is presented by LinkedIn Jobs.
Way out of here.
Oh, this is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Tuesday, May 4th, 2021. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney, and Taylor, you know, this could be kind of like a baggage claim Tuesday in a way, because I am parked on the side of the road at a rest area coming down I-87 from New York. I spent a lot of Monday with some family errands that I was running up in my home state of Vermont last night. I'm making my way back, stopping to do the podcast and talk to you.
Well, I appreciate you making time for me and the listeners to give them what they want, but you need to be careful out there, man. You're driving all over the East Coast. I'm sure you've had very little sleep. I'm concerned for your overall well-being at the moment.
No, I'm totally fine. Rest area just around where the Battle of Saratoga was in 1777. So I'm in a good place. I'm in a better place than I think some Mets employees. I wanted to tell you this story. So before our Sunday night game between the Phillies and the Mets, I bumped into the excellent beat writer for Newsday, Tim Healy. And I said to him, I said, you know, the way the Mets are going right now, you got the new owner, Steve Cohen, the team's not playing well. This new star that they just gave $341 million to, Francisco Lindor, he's not hitting. I said, this has all the earmarks of coaching changes, okay? And I said that to Tim, and he goes, huh. And last night, I got a direct message from Tim saying, well, there we go. Unbelievable. The Mets, less than 5 weeks into the season, the Mets are making significant changes. They fired hitting coach Chili Davis, assistant hitting coach Tom Slater, following the Mets' 6-5 loss to the Cardinals that dropped New York to 11-12. I mentioned Francisco Lindor is really struggling. Got a lot of thoughts on where this is all coming from. You know, is Steve Cohen involved? What it signals about the direction of the franchise as we move forward. A lot of injury information came down yesterday. Dodgers starter Dustin May, so promising in his early starts this year, will undergo season-ending Tommy John surgery to repair a damaged ulnar collateral ligament. The team announced that on Monday. Tony Gonsolin could return to the Dodgers rotation to take May's place sometime by the end of this month. Chicago White Sox center fielder Luis Robert won't resume baseball activities for 12 to 16 weeks while he recovers from a complete tear of his right hip flexor, another blow to the White Sox's efforts to win the American League Central this year. The Los Angeles Angels scratched Shohei Ohtani from a scheduled start against the Tampa Bay Rays on Monday. But here's the good thing about for Ohtani. He gets to hit. He was in the lineup last night. He went 2-for-4, including a home run. The reason why he scratched from his start was the fact that on Sunday, he took a fastball to his right elbow while hitting. The Colorado Rockies appointed Bill Schmidt as their interim general manager after parting ways with Jeff Breidich last week. And the National League Central Milwaukee Brewers are finally starting to get more healthy. Milwaukee activated 2018 NL MVP Christian Yelich and fellow outfielder Lorenzo Cain from the injured list. Let's get to the good stuff. As I just mentioned, Lorenzo Cain off the IL, and here's what he did in his first plate appearance.
Cain and Yelich return to the lineup tonight for the Brewers. Pitch to Cain, a drive hit back into left center field. Lorenzo Cain has returned with a lean back jack.
Yep, so Lorenzo Cain coming back and having an immediate impact. But the Philadelphia Phillies would come back. And look, JT Realmuto really gave the Phillies a big boost. You remember what a disastrous game they played on Sunday Night Baseball against the Mets. Here was JT in the first inning.
2-2 pitch. Swung on, hit high and deep. Left field, forget about it. A towering homer to the second deck.
Wow.
In left field, JT Realmuto, a no-doubter. Two-run home run, and the Phillies take the lead on JT's third of the year.
Scott Fransky, Sports Radio 94 WIP, with that call, and the Phillies went on to win that game 4-3. I mentioned that the Mets lost to the Cardinals 6-5. Nolan Arenado hit a home run in that game. Shohei Ohtani hit that home run last night. Number 9 of the year. Give a listen.
He's got 8 home runs and 20 RBI.
Center field. Shohei Sayonara again. Take your time, Shohei. That is number 9, and just like that.
And one of the hottest hitters in Major League Baseball early this season. How about professional hitter Cedric Mullins for the Orioles?
Hit well, deep right center. Racing back, and making the catch in right field. Haniger, did he have it? Does he have it? No, he doesn't. It's gone. It's out of here.
Wow.
Wave him around. Touch them all, Cedric Mullins. He had stopped. He thought Haniger had it.
That from more the Orioles television network. He's off to a great start. We're going to be talking with Jessica Mendoza about those Mets coaching changes and what it all means. We'll be talking with Sarah Langs, who will have the numbers game. But before all that, ESPN Films' latest documentary, 144, takes viewers inside the WNBA's unprecedented 2020 season. It's the story of a condensed season entirely in a bubble, where 144 players across 12 teams not only came together to play basketball, but also to dedicate their season to social justice. 144 premieres May 13th at 9 p.m. Eastern time on ESPN. The film will be available on ESPN Plus immediately after it airs.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11 ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Jessica Mendoza is a game analyst for ESPN. And at one point, Jess, you work for the Mets. So your perspective on what happened with the Mets last night, to me, really interesting to me. Before we get to that, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. Always doing good, honestly. But I'm in actually Jupiter, Florida right now instead of Oregon, shooting a commercial with Justin Verlander. So I'll probably get some updates on his rehab and everything that's going on with him.
Yeah. And you have to ask him, in the back of his mind, is he thinking about 300 wins? Ben, we'll get the answer next week. Late last night, the Mets lose again. They've lost their record now is 11-12. And they make, I think, what most teams would be would consider to be some kind of a panic move. They fire their hitting coach, Chili Davis. They fire their assistant hitting coach. You know, this is a month into the season. It's 23 games into the season. And I have so many questions about this, and I wish that I could give you the answers to. But because it happened late last night, because I'm not around the team, I don't have as much information. I will get some more. But I got to tell you, this is absolutely the hallmark of a new owner coming in. I've seen this 100 times where a new owner comes in and the results aren't as good as they as what were expected. And especially with Francisco Lindor, they spent all this money. They spent all this capital. They trade for the all-star shortstop. He looks terrible at the plate. His swing looks completely messed up. You know, last week we heard from Jeff McNeil, their second baseman, about how in a game, you know, the hitters didn't have the, you know, the information on the pitcher that played out during the course of the game. And then over the weekend, Jess, there was this weird byplay among the Mets hitters about this new hitting guy, Donnie Stevenson, coming in, like this fake personality. And we were trying to figure out what to do with that information on Sunday Night Baseball. And all of it added up, as I said to Tim Healy of Newsday before that game on Sunday, like a coach is going to get fired. It just had that feel of desperation. What do you think?
Yeah, well, I agree with you. I think that is usually a sign of a new owner, is just some sort of panic of this is not what was expected. You've made all these huge moves. You spent some money. You've made some trades, like all the things. And, you know, you're listening to feedback possibly from players. I mean, my biggest thing, though, is accountability. And I know every player at the major league level, you know this just as well. It's never the hitting coach. I mean, at that point, there's an own accountability and an understanding of what you need to do as a hitter. But I do believe that a lot of times it's like, okay, this isn't working. It's a month into the season. So there's this just a want of, okay, if we start firing people, maybe it'll make ignite something. You see that with maybe a player getting moved to the leadoff spot, but I don't understand why firing a coach and bringing someone in a month into the season is going to make a drastic change. However, if you're internal and you're listening to players talk about maybe going to other resources, not getting the information that they need on pitchers, you want to make that change before you get to like September. I do understand that. It just is shocking to me every time I see a firing of a manager, a hitting coach, a pitching coach this early in the season, just for results. It's one thing if they've done something off the field, but if the on the field results, let's be real. These major league players know how to hit on their own. They don't need to 100% rely or depend on a hitting coach.
Yeah. Luis Rojas. It was interesting after that story came out, his response was, you know, hitters talk all the time, like the third and fourth guy, by the time they come up, they've heard from the first and second hitters what the pitcher's doing, and they build off of that during the course of the game. And so he sort of last week downplayed that, but obviously there's pressure coming from within. I do think it's important to remember the context, and maybe somebody in the Mets organization should have remembered this. Offensive numbers are down around baseball. Like, it's not as if the Mets are the only team with their batting average down and the strikeouts are up. We're seeing that across the whole baseball landscape. And again, I don't know exactly who ordered this firing, but my absolute instinct is that's not Sandy Alderson's deal. Like, you're not going to see Sandy Alderson reflexively be dumping coaches a month into the season. What do you think?
I do feel like there is a dependence now, though, on analytics of the opposing pitchers. Like, I've seen it myself in clubhouses where it's not so much like, give me an understanding of what my body, my bat needs to do in this game, but more so, what is the pitcher going to throw me? What are my results against this pitcher? The type of pitches, having all of that in front of you to be able to really visualize and get a good understanding. And a lot of times the analytics are pretty dead on when it comes to opposing pitchers that you have, like within the division, a lot of at bats against. And so if that's not being, I get what you're saying of like passing on information, that's definitely like the old school in-game mentality, but there's a lot of players now. I mean, we saw with Javier Baez last year when he didn't have access to video, that rely a lot more on the analytics, the video technology, all the new things that we're seeing, especially the last few years, for them to have success.
And we also have to remember that part of the reason why Chili Davis was fired by the Cubs after just one season is that he didn't connect with some of their players, most notably Chris Bryan. So that'll be something worth watching. I am going to be curious if over the next 23 games, Lindor doesn't start hitting and the Mets don't start hitting, are we going to see more coaches fired? You know, that's the crazy part, is that you're basing this decision on such a small sample of games. And I got to say, I talked with more people yesterday. We talked about it on the broadcast on Sunday night about how messed up Lindor's swing is, how slow it is, how big he is physically in the upper half of his body. That's going to be something worth watching going forward. I mentioned Chris Bryant. You know, while he didn't necessarily hit well when he was working with Chili Davis, he's off to a tremendous start this year.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest difference, and this was the case for pretty much the entire Cubs team last year, was their inability to hit fastballs, and which was shocking because this was a team that crushed fastballs in the past. And in particular, Chris Bryant was something that he went into the offseason as a main focus. And you could see why. I mean, of all pitches to be able to get you, it's understandable if it's a breaking ball, you know, if it's specific pitches that, you know, where it's off speed. But in this particular case with Chris Bryant, he on elevated fastballs knew that he was struggling. A lot of it was his swing, his stance. If you look at the difference between last year to this year, just him in the batter's box alone, Buster, he's more upright. He has a shorter stance, so he's not. So remember how he would almost be like a wall squat, like down into his legs and kind of come from down to up, which worked really well on fastballs down in the zone, which we see so many guys trying to launch the ball. But because pitchers have adjusted, and especially to Chris Bryant, the way to beat him has been to elevate fastballs in the zone. Well, that's not the case early in this season. I mean, he's hitting over 400. He has four home runs already just on fastballs in the upper third of the zone compared to last season, 60 games. He hit 100, had one home run over the course of those 60 games. That was a very big weak spot for him, and pitchers just attacked him with fastballs up. And that, I know it's early in this season, is something that he is on a mission this offseason, and so far the results are paying off.
I feel so bad for Dustin May, who just seemed like he was absolutely on the cusp of greatness. You know, we saw him in the Sunday night game 8 days ago. Tremendous stuff. Second highest average fastball velocity behind Jacob deGrom. And now he's out. He's going to need Tommy John surgery. How big of a deal is this for the Mets?
You know, it wouldn't be as big of a deal, Buster, if they didn't have so many guys, pitchers on the injured list. I mean, you look at just how early the season. Okay, remember we were talking in spring training saying, is there a deeper pitching staff? Oh, poor Dodgers. They have eight pitchers, starting pitchers that they have to choose from to get into the starting rotation, including Tony Gonsolin and David Price. And now David Price is on the injured list. So is Gonsolin. I mean, you look at just their bullpen with Gratterall and Knebel. I mean, there's so many guys now on the injured list. Dustin May being out for the season. And my biggest thing isn't even so much May in the starting rotation, but I really liked him out of the bullpen near the back half of the year. I really, watching him in the World Series, watching him last October, he was someone that was incredibly successful because of that 100-mile-an-hour fastball, the breaking ball he could throw off of that. So, I do believe this is a huge hurt for the Dodgers, especially because of how many guys that are hurt, but more so later in the season when they get guys more healthier. I really like Dustin May and what he could do again in the postseason like he's done in the past.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember Joe Torre when I covered the Yankees. The Yankees during the offseason would add like two or three veterans and there'd be like nine guys. And Joe would be like, don't worry about it. It'll sort itself out. The baseball gods will sort it out. You know, it always seemed like that injuries would happen. All right. How cool is it before you go, Shohei Ohtani not able to pitch yesterday because he got dinged on the elbow, but he still contributed.
That's Shohei Ohtani. And something that I've been blown away with too, is I think he's got five or six stolen bases this year. I mean, he stole second and third a couple days ago. I mean, he's constantly contributing, whether it's, you know, and by the way, I think the Angels total stolen bases as a team outside of Ohtani is four. So him alone. And I'm loving that we're seeing more of that back in the game. But yeah, I mean, the fact that he can come in, be a huge contributor. I mean, I've talked to you about, like, Byron Buxton is one of my favorite players to watch right now in baseball. But Shohei Ohtani, without a doubt, is the best player because of everything that he can do, especially for young kids.
Absolutely. All right. You're shooting this commercial with Justin Verlander. Have fun with that.
Thanks, Buster.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
This is The Numbers Game with Sarah Langs.
Sarah Langs, a reporter and a producer at MLB.com, and also, as well established on the show, a fan of the New York Mets, a longtime fan. New ownership, Sarah, but boy, midseason coaching changes was a hallmark of the old ownership. And when I saw this come down last night, you were one of the first people I thought of. What'd you think? A month into the season, changing the hitting coach and the assistant hitting coach.
Yeah, you know, it was pretty surprising. I mean, I think a week ago we might have understood it a little bit more, but despite not winning a whole lot of games over the last week, they have scored more runs. You know, we saw them win that game on Sunday Night Baseball in kind of dramatic and back and forth fashion, and they scored a handful of runs last night, even though they didn't win the game. So I was a little bit surprised at the timing, and if the timing had been a week ago, it would have been, well, we're 3 weeks into the season. So I think what you were saying, and I saw what you were tweeting last night when this happened, with the fact that, you know, maybe ownership felt pressure that they need to be in a certain spot right now, and more so in year one than you would feel in another year. I definitely see that, you know, I can see that for sure.
Yeah. And I mentioned it, and you having, you know, watched Sandy Alderson work for a long time, I wanted to get your reaction on this. I asked Jessica Mendoza about it. My instinct is there's no chance that Sandy Alderson is reflexively making a move like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't seem like him. You know, what I always think of with these kind of early in the season changes is in, I think it was 2014 when the Mets had a day where they fired their hitting coach and, remove their closer and all of this stuff after one bad loss. And the thing was that this didn't even feel like that kind of day. And so it's just a little bit, you know, maybe a little more mysterious exactly where it's coming from.
All right, let's play the numbers game.
Number three
is 21. So that's how many games Paul DeJong has played against the Mets in his career. And, you know, Gary, Keith, and Ron were talking about this on the broadcast last night. He's sort of this known Mets killer despite not being in the division. And I had to look into it, and the context was pretty fun. So he has 20 career extra base hits in his 21 games against the Mets. That's actually tied for the fifth most, by any player in his first 21 games against a single opponent in the modern era. So we have Dante Bichette against the Phillies had 24 extra base hits in his first 21 games against them. Joe DiMaggio against now the Orioles, but they were the Browns at the time, 24. Ken Griffey Jr. against the Rockies, 21. And Todd Zeal against the Angels had 21. And then you've got DeJong in a tie with Corey Dickerson against the Reds and Randall Grichuk against the Orioles. It's so silly. It doesn't really mean anything, but, you know, it's nice to get that confirmation bias of, it feels like he's always hitting against the Mets, and here we go, he is.
Number two
is 615. So yesterday, entering the day, the Royals led the majors with a 16-10 record. They had a negative run differential, -3. And there's been a lot of talk of, do we believe in the Royals? And obviously they're not even at full strength right now. They don't have Alberto Mondesi. We don't know when, you know, they might have some call-ups and whatever else, but they were leading the majors. They had negative run differential. And I think the team, or maybe its fans, were feeling like maybe they're not getting talked about enough. So I had to take a look at this. So they were the first team in the modern era to have at least a share of the best record in the majors while having a negative run differential at least 25 games into the season. So the prior most games into a season that a team had done that, had the best record in the majors and had a negative run differential, was 23 games into the season by the 1926 Dodgers. So
wow.
That's not to say that they're not 100% for real necessarily. And now the best record after yesterday is the Giants at 607, but it is some interesting context. And I think worth noting with them being the frequent, hey, why aren't we talking about them enough kind of team among the surprises early this season.
Number one
is 59. So that's how many strikeouts Jacob DeGrom has in his five starts entering tonight. That's tied with Nolan Ryan in 1978 for the most in the first five starts of the season. And so we've got to look ahead. Most in the first six starts of the season. Looking ahead to DeGrom's next start here is 71 by Ryan in 1978. Shane Bieber this year has 68, which is second on that list. And I mean, it's just incredible because every Jacob DeGrom start is just like a stats fest. You know, there's like 5 million different angles to look at. And something I looked into last time that I thought was fun, he has an 0.51 ERA entering tonight. It's the lowest by any Mets pitcher in his first five starts of the season. You think about, they've certainly had some good pitching and some history of good pitching, and no Mets pitcher has ever gotten off to a start like this.
So, Sarah, you've seen Francisco Lindor and how much he's struggling. 0-for-4 last night. He just looks completely lost at the plate. And I think that even though you had Jacob DeGrom starting tonight, and, you know, there's a question of can the Mets bats get going on the days that he pitches, I think it's reached the point with Lindor where if I'm Luis Rojas, I'm saying, you know what, we're going to give you a couple days to try to work on some things and sort it out. What are you seeing in Lindor?
Yeah, I mean, I think that we're certainly at that point, especially, I mean, I think his hitless streak is now the second longest of his career and pretty close to that longest, which I think was 0-for-27, I want to say, in 2016 with the Indians. But, you know, Eduardo Perez did a great breakdown of this on Baseball Tonight on Sunday, talking about how he isn't barreling the ball. And I think that that's really a key here, because when you think of Lindor, you think of really good offensive shortstop. And if you look at his barrel rate, which is, you know, percentage of batted balls that are hit with the ideal combination of launch angle and exit velocity, it's not just 2021 being down, but if you look really since 2018, he's been on a downward slope there. So it's interesting, because I think that there are immediate things he's doing in terms of pressing and his swing not looking great that indicate that this year hasn't been good. But you can also sort of look at this as a bit of a trajectory. And I do wonder if some of the offensive, you know, expectations that there were for him this year were kind of based off that 2018 and 2017 stretch. And I wonder what, if and when he does get going, what exactly that offensive output will look like.
Yeah, Tim Kirkjian said in the podcast yesterday, well, in the end, he'll have the numbers. And I'm like, I'm not so sure. I don't agree with that based on where his swing is. And again, I, you know, just talking with hitting coaches and evaluators of the teams and what they're seeing with him tonight. I wanted to ask you this. They play host to the Diamondbacks on Friday at Citi Field. You know, Mets fans, you're one of them. What's the reaction going to be to Lindor if he comes back and this, these struggles are continuing for his first plate appearance? Because I kind of feel like, and I've talked to my affection for Mets fans in the past, I kind of feel like that first plate appearance, he might get a bunch of cheers. Like, people are going to be like, come on. But then after that, he'll be held accountable for results.
Yeah, it's almost like when a pitcher throws like 10 straight balls and you get almost the sarcastic cheers of like, come on, let's get going here. I could almost see that reaction. But I mean, we've seen New York fans are back in full swing, right? Giancarlo Stanton got booed on opening day, and we've certainly heard and seen plenty of boos at Citi Field this year. So it does feel like if he doesn't get going, that that will continue. But I am not, I don't condone booing. Just overall, as a fan, I just want everyone to be happy and cheering positively. So I do hope that people will maybe not do that quite as much, but I do think realistically there will be boosts.
All right, Sarah, thanks for doing this. Great to talk with you.
Thanks so much for having me, Buster.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster, Bleacher Tweets for a Tuesday. First up, we have Titan Man at Titan Man, and Titan Man writes in, are you really going to let Tim slide and say, like, you having covered games from a million years ago, took a shot at your age, Buster, and you let it go?
Yeah, I did, because I kind of don't understand it. And I got to say, my older sister, Hannah Deming, does this same sort of thing where, you know, we have a running text string with myself and my three siblings, and we're all ripping each other all the time. And my sister, Hannah, who's 2.5 years older than me, keeps taking shots at my age. And I'm like, Hannah, look, you know, you can make fun of me for being short. You can make fun of me for being a flatlander. You can make fun of me for, you know, the guy who's going through a divorce, right? That's all fair game. But you can't make fun of me for being old, because you're older than me. Like, that's your kryptonite. But Tim did it just as my sister Hannah did. I don't get that. Do you?
Maybe it's like a veiled shot. Maybe they consider you wiser than they are, and this is how they're taking it out on you. Like, all right, you're an old soul, Buster, but you seem like you're older than I am. I don't know. What do you think?
I don't understand it. Like, my sister constantly does that. She's like, yeah, well, you know, old person like you. And I'm like, Hannah, you're older than I am.
Maybe Tim, you know, is a veiled sign of respect, but it doesn't sound like your sister respects you very much. So
no, not at all. None of it. You know how it goes with siblings.
Oh yeah, you're gonna have to deal with that another time. One more for today. Max Moreno at Max Moreno 3 writes in, just giving it the old eyeball test. Corey Seager doesn't look to be getting balls most Major League Baseball shortstops get to. What are your thoughts, and what are scouts saying? Is it time to move him off short?
Max, I am going to make some calls today, and I will get an answer for you by the end of the week. I'll get some response for you from evaluators from looking at numbers.
All righty. There you go. Tweet and Buster will leap into action. Not all the time, sometimes, but please continue to write in #BleacherTweets and follow, rate, and review this podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts.
That's it for today. My thanks to Jessica Mendoza, to Sarah Langs, to Taylor Schwenk. Thanks for listening, everybody. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.